Okay, good evening. Mem Gimel, or the other, I'm going over the page onto Mem Gimel on the base in just a short time. Just before we move on, we are discussing this whole shaila about Tchumin Amal and Al-Sorah, whether there is Tchumin above 10. About 10 Tvachim, we spoke last time at quite some length again about the, it's really just a number of children put together into one, but it was all about Eliyahu, the different forms that Eliyahu comes back in, Chasam Sofer, Benishchai, etc. Just add one or two nukudas. There's an interesting, I saw Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the Chazan Torocha, he says that he once asked the Chazan Ish, he said, according to the Chasam Sofer says that when Eliyahu comes as a Malach, he can go as far as he wants. When he's in a human body, then he's subject to tuchuzim. So the Gemara over here, which said that in the morning we assumed it was Eliyahu who was teaching in Surah the seven halachas, he had to be in a human body because to teach Torah b'Shamayim, he couldn't be a malach. So therefore, the Gemara assumed if he was in Surah in the morning, got to Pumbedisa by the evening, must be went above 10. To which the Gemara says it wasn't Eliyahu. But Reb Chaim asked the Chazan Ish, as he recalls when he asked the Chazan Ish, that according to the Yisrael of the Chasam Sofer, what's the problem? Eliyahu may have come, right, came to Surah, taught the halachas as a human being, and then, did it like a superman. In other words, took his neshama out of his body, now he wouldn't be subject to tchumen, flew over to Pumbedisa, got back into his body, to teach halachas, he's got to be in the body, and taught the halachas like that. That's what he asked.
How could he get back into his body? Where was his body? His body was...
Okay, they asked me that yesterday. I said, I have the same question. I thought I had an answer to this as well. So maybe they're going about 10, we're going to tour. I did have the same question, but I did have an answer. How did he carry his body? How did the body get to the other place? That I can't remember what... that wasn't what the Chazan Ish answered. The Chazan Ish answered him, he said, Bibdi Chusa. Right, the Chazan Ish answered him with a joke. I mean, at least Reb Chaim assumes it's a joke. Because he said he couldn't do that, because for him to take his neshama out of his guf would be an issa of netilas neshama. Right? You're not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos. Why? Netilas neshama. To take the neshama out of the guf is the issa of netilas neshama. So he said once Eliyahu was in the guf, he couldn't take his neshama out of his guf. So Reb Chaim says he assumes the Chazan Ish was joking, because he doesn't really think that there's really an issue of Netilas Neshama in that. Others, I think the Chazan Ish may have been quite serious about that.
But did you say every Shabbos when it comes to Dris, he comes as a mother?
Yeah.
So he must be changing from time to time.
What?
Because he has appeared to people, appeared in this case as Eliyahu in his guf, and then he had a bris in another Shabbos, he had to somehow get out of it.
Maybe there wasn't a bris on that Shabbos.
Not that Shabbos, but Bechal at some.
No, that's not a problem. It was only this Shabbos that he had to come and give the ship.
I didn't even see his guf on Shabbos.
Not murder.
Not Bechal.
Okay, that was the Chazan Ish, maybe some confusion there.
It's a good for Shabbat. It's a good full stop.
Huh?
It's going to be a full stop on the Tidus for sure. Go
not necessarily. That's why I said like an animal. When I said the husband an animal, there's no issa per se. Issa for the old phase. He's made to do that. Sort of thing. Okay, that was the Chazan Ish's quoted sense of humor. Right. But Reb Chaim actually what he's busy with in this piece is in Derech HaMelech. Anyone wants to look up in Shmita the Yovel. I think it is, and what he's actually discussing there is the general, which is something very similar to what we talked about in Ben Shchai and others, is there's a halacha obviously in Shemitah, you're not allowed to work the land. You're not allowed to do avodah on trees. So are you allowed to do, using some sort of lachash, whatever you want to call it, you write a special, like kamiya, an amulet, and you hang it on the tree in order to encourage growth. And the Yerushalmi says you're not allowed to do that. So Reb Chaim says what he's trying to work out is that dafka because you're doing the maisa, you're doing the maisa, you're writing and you're putting it on the tree. What if you were to say some sort of mantra, some sort of lachash, right? Because we have that Gemara that we talked about Gemara in Sanhedrin says, if a person was to use some sort of a lafash, on the choshim ba'akadim to get them trapped on Shabbos, it's a person hasn't done any, yes, it's mutter. Is it a chiluk between shemitz on Shabbos, or is it a chiluk between, because over there you're doing a maisa, writing and putting out? He's more inclined to say that. He does mention the Shloah Kodesh, something that Kedas Yaakov brings, that's his father, the cycler. The Shloah Kodesh says that Chazal say, on the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, do you know how many Sefer Torah he wrote? Record time. I know people who can write a line of a Sefer Torah in less than 3 minutes, that's fast. Right? Still do the maths. He wrote 13 Sefer Torah on the last day of his life. So, how did he manage that one? Bear in mind, by the way, it was also Shabbos. He died on Shabbos. So, the Shloah says, what he did was, he didn't really write it. He used the Shem Hashem. He used the Shem. And that's how he did it. It's an interesting way to do. The Gabi Hilchos Tam, that's one thing to talk about. But the Stipler says, what about Shabbos? What about Shabbos? It's okay. Baisa says, no, it's okay there because you're not really doing anything. Right? Compare that with, give you one other Maya Mokum which she brings. Sort of, I guess, this week's editor, last week's editor, this week's editor. There's a Moshe Abzakenim, one of the Bali Tosfos in last week's parasha, but it links, I think, to this week's parasha with Tzalof, with the Mekoshe Sheitzim. So, what was he doing being Mekoshe Sheitzim? It talks about because he was doing Mekoshe Sheitzim to go and cook them on. Why do you need to cook them on? Isa Shed Tofu Eifu, Isa Shed Tavad. Sorry, not that. Chazal tell us, whatever you thought, right, you want steak, you think steak, and it turns into steak. Which tastes steak is, at least. On the other hand, we know that it says, Isha Sher Tofu Eifu, Isha Sher Damashu Vashedu. You have to cook or bake all your Shabbos mon before Shabbos. Says the Bali Tos, Vice Tos, from here you see, that would be a problem of Bishul on Shabbos. If you were to make them on, taste, whatever you want to say, like the your cholent, there would be a problem on Bishul.
Without doing anything. So you can only make it something which is cold, as it were. And so the subject doesn't change it.
So maybe you think before Shabbos about it being on a hot plate, and it's. So he's got this whole sort of conflict, what's going on. I personally think, if I may suggest, that there's a very simple solution to what's going on over here. And that is, how do you write a Sefer Torah? Not by using a shape. That's not the normal way, not of writing, and it's not the normal way of writing a Sefer Torah. Right? Poshut. So that, avada, is not just kelach yad, it's kelach yad gomur, right? You know, there's two different levels of kelach yad. Kelach yad is when you do a malach in an unusual fashion, it's still awesome with the rabban, but if you do it in a way that's not just unusual, it's extremely unusual, it's very difficult to do, then it can even become mutter. Okay? That being the case, so, so to write a Sefer Torah using Shemus of Hashem, you've got to have all sorts of kavon and things like that. Look, that's Kelach Hayav. Fine, 100%. However, when you are talking about cooking them on with your machshava, even though it's only machshava there, right? Well, that's completely normal. How else do you cook them on? There was no other way. That was the way to do it. For 40 years, that's what they did. That was the norm. So although in terms of the malach of Bishul, generally speaking, it's an unusual form of Bishul, but this comes back to the old Chakira, do you look at the malach as it was in the Mishkan, or do you look at what's normal for this particular thing? So for example, the example I think we quoted is, when you walk past the camera on Shabbos, is that a problem of coasting? Well, it's an unusual way of doing coasting. On the other hand, it's a perfectly normal way of doing coasting on a camera. That's what it's made for. So yesh v'yesh, I've seen different things on this. So here as well, with the mon, that was the way of cooking it. That was the way of making your challenge for the 40 years in the Midbar. That was the way it was done. And therefore, yes, it would be a problem on Shabbos. That's not kirachiyah. Simple as that. That's how we could possibly be miyashid it. However, on the other hand, what we spoke about last week, murdering somebody just by, speaking or something like that. So again, that is unusual, although we don't have the Gabi Shabbos that happened. That's already, we don't really have to go down that line. But etzem, murder is murder. It doesn't matter if it's unusual or not, and therefore it's poshut that there is an issur murder. Hence, as the Ben Ish Chai mentioned, hello again, out to Oinek HaShar Mitzri. That's why we say that Moshe Rabbeinu had to set up the Oinek Mikvot, as a tikkun for having killed the Mitzri, a few months ago, or whatever that means. But all the Gemaras that we see, where he made them Gal Shalat Thomas, Yodam and Gerim, and all these things we had, the Gemara and Shabbos, that is different, because he didn't say a word. And if it's just the Machshavo, Kenzan, there's no issur of murder or anything like that. Okay. That is just a couple of additional pieces of information. So here we go into the next ride. With our Shaila, Yesh Tukum Lamana Me'al Sora, Inkum Lamana Me'al Sora, says the Gemara, then give it on the double last line of the page. Toshima, Harini Nozir Beyonche Ben David Boy. If a person says, I will become a Nozir on the day that Ben David comes. As far as Rashi is concerned, that means on the day that David, that Moshiach comes, I am becoming a Nozir. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, that means on the day that Moshiach Ben Dovid, the first opportunity that he could come, then I'm being Mekabel Nazirus. So we say, Mutar Lishtos Yayin B'Shabbos is Yom Tovim, a person is allowed to drink wine on Shabbos and Yom Tov, for the time being it's to stick to Rashi and Shabbat, because on Shabbos and Yom Tov you don't have to be choshish that he will or he has come. But also Lishtos Yayin Kolim Esachol, but you're not allowed to drink the wine any days of the week. Sunday to Friday, you're not allowed to drink the wine. Because maybe Moshiach has come, or it comes. Say, it's fine if you say there is a problem, now we understand that the Shabbos is to be on the Tov, and on Shabbos and Yom Tov, Mutar, that's why you can drink the wine. Because there's no way for Moshiach to get there on Shabbos. But if you say that there is no Tuchumin above 10, Shabbos is Yom Tov. Why is it Mutar on Shabbos and Yom Tov to drink wine? Maybe Moshiach will come today. So to that, the Gemara answers, Shani also is different over there. So my Krob is the other apostle that says, Hine Anuchi Shereach Lachem, he said, Yohan Ovi, we're going to the Poskim Malachi that says, the old I'm sending to you at Yohan Ovi, right before Moshiach comes, he will come and inform you of Moshiach's arrival the next day. We're going there. And Moshiach didn't come on Friday. So if he didn't come on Friday, Moshiach's not coming on Shabbos. On the weekdays, every single day, it should be permitted to drink wine. Because I know he's not coming today. Why not? Because then Yod didn't come the previous day. And I'll rot the answer to that. Because on Rino we say, maybe he did come the previous day, the Beis Nagodol, and he went to the Beis Nagodol. Okay, so the Gemara says no, he is not going to the Beis Din HaGadol. But you know what, let's pause there for a second. What is this Beis Din HaGadol? The Beis Din HaGadol, on the face of it, what's the Beis Din HaGadol? You may have said it means Bedat, one of the big body dinner in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Ritva, Nei Pirush, the Lishka Fagosis, the coin based in Agodo, Ki Shom Yigolivetzchel, because that's where he's going to be revealed to start with. So we're talking about the real based in Agodo, the Sanhedrin, right? Lishka Fagosis. Zug the Mara Chios, Lichoira, from here we have a Raya to the, hopefully by now you know what I'm talking about, we have a Raya to the Shitta of the Rambam, Mari Ben Leid. Everyone who held by that in Tzvah, that you can reinstate Smicha, even though we've lost it. Because otherwise, how is Eliyahu going to come to the Beis HaGadol? If he's coming to the Beis HaGadol, there's much more that is the Beis HaGadol. So you've got to have Smicha for that. L'chayra is the raya to the shita of the Rav, the Rambam.
So then the Mashiach can't come until we have a proper Beis Din HaGadol. So as we are today, we can't come. We didn't go that far.
Maybe he'll reconvene it instantly when
he himself will reconvene it, but then he's not going to go to it. So he has our Bahá'í. Vasachas is all, I suppose.
No, that's all right. They're bringing from it. Well, so just a quick recap of the background to this whole thing, because just have on record now, because Shavuos is not on record. To remind you, you had the Ma'ari Beira, right? He was one of the great Rabban Tzfat from the Megoroshe Sfarad, right, from the Spanish expulsion. He was the Rebbe of the Ma'abit, and various others, including arguably the Beis Yosef, the Chidor believes it's impossible, but he was the head of the golden era in Tzfat, and the Simi was a Marana, as we said, right? The people came along to the Rabban in Tzfat, and they were worried that because of various avodas they'd been doing, coercion, not coercion, but the Ikka Avodah Zarah, they were worried that they were Chayav Koris. And they knew that Halacha is the Gemara says in Malkus, if you get Malkus, then that exonerates them of Koris. So they asked, can you please give us Malkus? So Ma'ari Beira says, we can't give you Malkus because we don't have a Sanhedrin. We need Smicha, we need a Sanhedrin. They kept pushing at it, and eventually they somewhat capitulated, and they said, you know what, fine, that is the shit of the Rambam. The Rambam says in Pirush HaMishnah in Sanhedrin, Perek Aleph, he says, it would appear to me that Ki Kishetiyeh Haskomo Mikol HaChachomim Val Tamidim, and there will be an agreement amongst all the Chachomim and Tamidim. And this is in Reish, just to give you an idea, we're talking about the year Reish Tadichet. Okay? Almost 500 years ago. So, and the Rambam writes over them, and there will be an agreement amongst all of them to appoint over them Ishmin Ayeshiva, the Yosimo Selerosh, the appointment to head. He's got to be something from Eretz Yisrael, like you mentioned. And he will get Tzmicha through that. He'll be able to give others Tzmicha. Says the Rambam, it appears to me this is the way it's going to work, because otherwise, Yetra should Timothy based on Agoda Lodim, you'll never have the based on Agoda again. Right? Why? Because you'd always need to have somebody who's got Tzmicha to get it going. And our Kodesh Baruch Hu has promised us, that we are going to have a Sanhedrin again. So, he says, oh, by the way, we're talking about a time when the Klal Yisrael have an Afsukhuyas, etc., before Moshiach comes. Pirush HaMishnah is in the text of the Torah, he also alludes to such an idea, and then he writes the same in Mishnah Torah. In Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet, Halacha Yud Aleph, he writes.
Can you just ask me, not quite what we're seeing now, but I was always under the impression the majority of you have to be accept the Torah, have to, or should I say, follow the Torah, adhere to the Torah. And if they're not, then you won't have the Mashiach.
No, not necessarily for the Sanhedrin. I'm talking about bringing Moshiach. That's in terms of bringing Moshiach. This is in terms of setting up the Sanhedrin. Two different things. Although the Rambam does seem to link, I agree, he does seem to say that we have to have the Zechuyos in order to merit the merit. But it's not so much that it's a condition, it's just a Matthias. Hashem's not going to let it happen until we've got enough merit. I don't know. That's part of the whole argument
how can we be certain that we have to wait for Mashiach?
Well,
if it became like it is now, becoming quite difficult for even around the world, and it gets, let's say it gets worse, and people decide, well, I've got to make Aliyah, I've got to go to Eretz Yisrael. They won't go with Mashiach, they won't go with Aliyah, they're going onto their own auspices. Is that not an alternative to the coming of Mashiach, or coming of Eliyahu, toward helping them now it's time to go?
Alternative to what?
Alternative to what we're describing, that Eliyahu will come followed by Mashiach.
No, these are two different things. Eliyahu will come in the day before to tell us, get ready,
Mashiach. There's nobody here to tell us anything, no? Because they've all gone.
I don't think everyone's going to have gone somehow.
They'll tell you in Israel.
Huh? Yeah, exactly, they'll tell you in Israel. You have to realise as well, if you're being Aristotle, you're spinning dogs. They can say all they want, Ratius, good, I'll say, they're spinning goddess and Aristotle as well. So Moshiach comes, when gods. Right? It's goddess in London, goddess in Eretz Yisrael. I mean,
right.
You see what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. It's clearly goddess as well. They at least have mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I assume you don't have to go with the shifters like that, but it's not others. Chas v'chalil, I'm not saying that Avir Eretz Yisrael is gaval to go to that. You should always echo to it. But Lamaita, it's still goddess. Goddess is goddess. So the Rambam writes in Mishnah. So he writes the same thing. He writes near the Adavarim. If all the Chachamim would be maskim, all the Chachamim and Eretzol would be maskim to appoint Dayanin and to give them smicha, then it would work. They'd be able to be down dini kenosos. They'd be able to give smicha to others. So you may well ask, so why? What was the big thing? And you find in Gomorrah's way they went to such great lengths in order to ensure the continuation of smicha. Why? It can always be brought back. The answer is it's going to be very difficult when everyone's dispersed. They did everything they could to try and stop it ceasing. And he goes on like that, and he says at the end, but something there still needs, a decision made on it. Okay, that's the position of the Rambam. The Maharibe Rav acted upon it. He asked, please don't publicize it. He didn't want them in Yerushalayim to hear about it. He was worried about the Maharal Bach, right? Rav Moshe Ibn Chovi was son of the Inyakov, who he was worried that in fact happened to them, he wouldn't be maskim, because they had very different views on two major gazelim, but they had different views, as I always say, much like the Baal HaMor and the Ramban. They clearly had different, ooh, the Shem Shammai, they had great respect for one another, as Talmid HaChacham, but they had very, very heated arguments. There was the case of a get in Tzfat. There was a get in Chalab. There was a case of an Aguna in Metrobulus or something like that. There was a case of Kiddush in Mitzrayim, and there was various others. They had quite a number of heated machlokes. So, fine. That was the theory as to why he didn't want it publicized. I say theory because there is a theory which has been brought out, where they sort of put it into a separate volume, the Kuntrasim, which the Maharal Bach printed at the end of his Teshuvahs, with their back and forth about it. And it doesn't say who wrote the introduction there, but it's somebody who's researched it, and that part of it is what I'm saying is some of it is coming from there. So the problem was that in Tzfat, however, people said it's not still not correct. You can't just ignore Yerushalayim. So Kanireh, because it's not absolutely clear, but what he decided to do was, he played what he thought was a very clever move. See, in Yerushalayim, you had the Maharal Bach, who was definitely the leader in Yerushalayim. He was the godman in Yerushalayim. But there was also another very choshev Baal HaChacham, who was called Rav Moshe Di Castro, who was a Talmid of the Maharibe Rav. So what he did was, he sent a letter with a messenger to his Talmid, asking, do you agree to what we're doing? And the Maharal Bach, he just sent a Kesav Smicha to. Didn't ask him whether you agree or not, because he knew he'd probably say no. But he relied on the fact that his Talmud is not going to argue with him.
But he said, Kesav Smicha to the
Maharal Bach.
Said, I give you Smicha now.
Yeah, there was the Maharibe Rav.
On the basis that I now have a base in which links to
my Talmud.
We've already acted, they've already done it.
Now, one second, I didn't understand the story.
Sorry, go.
Which?
I don't understand the story. The one who's outside Eretz Yisrael sent a letter to the Talmud.
They're all in Eretz Yisrael.
So I'll get confused with the name.
Tzfas. One group is in Tzfas, the other group is in Yerushalayim.
So one in Tzfas sent a letter to the Talmud.
In Yerushalayim.
Talmud in Yerushalayim. The Talmud gave a letter to his teacher to say
No. Maharibe Rav, he's the leader of Tzfas.
Right.
They've effectively given him smicha because you've got in Tzfas the vast majority of Gedolim are in Tzfas anyway. Right. They've got the majority which he believes
they gave him smicha, right.
He was able to give smicha to others. The problem was there was pressure put on him that you can't just sideline Yerushalayim, you have to include them.
Yeah.
So in the end he said, fine, I'm not going around asking everyone Yerushalayim. So he asked his Talmud, And the point was hopefully Islam with a degree to be able to show people, look, in Yerushalayim, they went there happy with it. The Ma'al al-Bakh, what are you going to do? The Ma'al al-Bakh, you can't ignore him entirely. You're not going to ask him for his agreement, because I know he's probably going to say no. But we can't ignore him. So the Ma'al, he's a perfect candidate to give smicha to. I mean, again, there's no question about it. The Ma'aribe Rav, right, recognized the Ma'al al-Bakh as a god. Yeah. The Ma'aribe Rav, you'll see, believed he was greater than the Ma'al al-Bakh.
He didn't think the Ma'al al-Bakh was greater than him.
No,
he thought he himself was greater than.
You're going to see. Well, he definitely believed he was the one who he was the
but
one.
To say, you can say there are two Gedolim, one gives me to the other. I can appreciate what's going on here, but you could take it as an insult.
No, that was never an issue. No. The Ma'al al-Bakh sent back the smicha saying, "I'm not taking this smicha because I don't agree with what you're doing. You can't do this." And he did he write a letter with it? Yeah, he wrote to Kuntras with it, explaining why you can't do it. It doesn't work. The Talmud, that was the shocker, did the same. He also disagreed, and he wrote the whole thing. And the real problem was that the two of them, apparently, if you go through them, they seem to have more or less the same time. It's very lengthy, and therefore there was a chashash of the Ma'aribe Rav that they were actually working together against him. Yeah. Right? Which they say is not likely. It doesn't seem that's the case, because the Talmud was very, very careful. He didn't want to, in public, disagree with Rav, but he said, I don't understand what's going on over there. So, in the meantime, before the Shliach got back to Yerushalayim with their, you know, with the responses from Yerushalayim, so the Ma'aribe Rav doesn't yet know what's coming. So the Ma'aribe Rav, he publicized, there's no reason to keep it hush-hush anymore. So he publicized in what's called the Igeres HaSmicha what he'd done, and why he'd done it. Then he gets these two things back, right? The Talmud and the Ma'al al-Bakh. So first he responds to the Talmud with an absolutely scathing letter.
Yeah.
Saying basically, you know, first of all, he just ripped apart everything he said. Right? He went through point by point by point, and he's just basically, oh, you've misunderstood this, you haven't done this right. And he basically said, you've got a chutzpah to argue with me, and etc. And at the end of it, he basically says that, you know, Ritu the Loshin, he writes, this is Ho'avoyin, he says, I promise you, Sha'atu Chayev Nidri, that you're actually Chayev to be put in Nidri. But I've decided to withhold that Kazerim right now, because people have asked me, the Chaverim, that's the fellow Rabbonim, said that I shouldn't, you know, get carried away. He writes, should a little scorpion like you, Bifnei Rabbi, in front of his Rebbe, Yigzar Omer Halacha L'maisa, start telling me what Halacha L'maisa is? V'sigdar Omer V'yotan L'maisa L'fi Da'atacha. He was very, very upset. The Ma'al al-Bakh, and the same so he sent that to the task. Fine. The Ma'al al-Bakh, before the Ma'aribe Rav got a chance to even respond to anything, he wrote a second kuntras now, responding to the Igeres HaSmicha the Ma'aribe Rav. This is a bit of a kafala. You get the basic picture, right? There's going to be kuntras in back. So then the Ma'aribe Rav wrote his second kuntras, because the Igeres HaSmicha was number one, his second kuntras, responding to the words of the Ma'al al-Bakh. Then the Ma'al al-Bakh wrote a third contrast responding to that with a couple of addendums which came later. In a nutshell, what were the main tainas? What were the main tainas of those who disagree with the Ma'aribe Rav? First of all, they said, the Rambam writes, you need somebody who is, he writes in Elsa, it's got to be Ro'i Lelami Dulahoris Pachalatarakul. You've got to have somebody there on your Sanhedrin who is fitting to teach and to paskin on Kol HaTorah Kula. The Radbaz, who sided with the Ma'al al-Bakh, already said that in his opinion that doesn't exist in our times. Okay?
Just one person can do that.
No, you need one person like that. You need one person like that on a Sanhedrin. So the Ma'aribe Rav wrote back to that. He said, that's me. He said, that is me. He says, I'm not coming here to show off, but that's the material thing. I think he writes there how even before he was already 18, he was the Rav of a very kosher town where there were over 500 big family chachom in there. He says, I haven't sinned, but etc. He says, I'm not coming here to show off. My Al-Bakh, however, wasn't very impressed with that one. Okay, that was taina number one. Taina number two was the Rambam said it time and again, you need haskamas kol hachachomim. Well, you don't, because here in Yerushalayim we don't agree with what you're doing. So to that, they responded, the Rambam doesn't mean kol. Kol is the the figurative kol, which we know kol just means ruba kukula. The majority is as good as kula. So they disagreed on that one as well. Third thing was, just a practical thing, you're going to start setting up a Sanhedrin. What are you going to do now, like your sort of thing, Yom Tov Sheni, when it comes to Kiddush HaChodesh? There's going to be such confusion, and there's going to be such, it's going to come to Chilul Yom Tov, people are going to be eating Chametz on Pesach, people are going to get completely mixed up. So to that, the Ma'ariv Eilam wrote that, and he said, no, we never ever meant that the Sanhedrin should start doing these sort of things. It was set up only for certain specific purposes, and certain things we need till Moshiach comes. But that's, I suppose, fair enough. That was the, I don't know if maybe the other side said you can't do a halfway house. Okay. The fourth time was that the Rambam himself finishes off with Tzorech Hechrei Avadomus. So clearly the Rambam Habakalamayit himself is not sure about it. Right? Different theories as to why.
Yeah.
So, to that, the Ma'ariv Rav wrote back, and this is, I think, where he, one of the things where he wrote very strongly to the Talmud. He said, you don't know how to learn. And he says, you can't read a simple Rambam. He says, look at what the Rambam writes. The Rambam is clearly, when he says, he's going back on what he refers to earlier, both here and in Pirush HaMishnah, is that he's not sure whether you need three people who've got Tzmicha in order to be able to give it on. Or is it good enough you've got one with Tzmicha and two other fellow Rabbonim, and together they can come together and give Tzmicha to others. That's what he was unsure about. So if Hechrei Avadol on that Nekud.
So then you're going to need, according to that, three people.
Maybe you'd have to get three
and
that people agreed to.
And he claimed that he had three, I take it, who are of a suitable
size. I don't know, maybe that, or I don't know what he did on that one.
Yeah.
And the fifth and final tanya for our purposes, there are others, but the fifth and final tanya was that, really, it's really a clash on the Rambam, maybe that's why Tzorech Hechrei Avadol they theorized, and that is, but what's the problem? Like people have been asking, leave what we said in the Gemara for a second, yeah? Eliyahu's coming before Moshiach. Eliyahu's got Tzmicha. And if he's got Tzmicha, he'll be able to give it over. What's the big problem? Right? The Radvaz went even further. The Radvaz, besides asking that, he also said, well, maybe from the B'nai Ru'umin it will return. The Radvaz, well, sure, anyway, that definitely the 10 lost tribes, the Choladir, some of them will return. Maybe they've kept Tzmicha up. They ask him that, they say it's a bit of a pedal to say that because Smicha can only be in Eretz Yisrael. These 10 lost tribes will be outside of Eretz Yisrael for a long time.
Is that why the Rambam couldn't have done it if he believed it could have been done? The Rambam in his time maybe would have had the authority to do it, but he wasn't in Eretz Yisrael.
Either that, or the Rambam felt it wasn't necessary in his time, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a dispersion as well, but yeah, if he wasn't in Eretz Yisrael at the time, that would be a reason. Lemaisa, in response to that one, the Ma'ariv Beirah said, and Yehud can't do it because he's a Malach. So you're the Rosh Hamayim.
No way.
Oh, well, that's a big question, right? He won't be able to give Smicha to others. Now, obviously, that's where we get back into this whole Chasam Sofer. Whether he is, he's not. Okay. The Ma'arabach, obviously, would say he is not always a Malach, like he said. No, the Maita, what happened was, the Ma'aribi Rav went ahead. Even though he was, actually, he had to escape a couple of times from Tzfat, but he did give Smicha to the Mabit and to the Beis Yosef, and another two. There's a bit of disagreement who those two are. The Beis Yosef then gave over Smicha to Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, and Rav Shlomo Alkabetz gave Smicha then to Rav Chaim Vital. So we're talking about it did continue for about 100 years. What happens after that is, it's not clear why it stopped. As Rav Tukhachinsky says, and that's if he showed me, he says over there, it's not misstabbed, it was because of the big machalikas, because he says, we know that Radvaz came to Eretz Yisrael, you know, during that period, when Tzmicha was still going, and we don't find a single reference from the Radvaz that he opposed anything. So kind of, yeah, he accepted. He voiced his opposition in the beginning, and he said, okay, what's been done has been done, move on, you know. So, rather, Rav Tukhachinsky, he thinks the reason is just simply logistical, because once you had all the Rabbonim there in the golden era, but once there was dispersion and things weren't so easy, you didn't have enough Rabbonim in one place to be able to continue it so easily. Okay, still not absolutely clear why that happened. One very important point just to make, just basically in conclusion, and that is, in this, as I said, this mogul there, the mogul there in the introduction, they make this point that although this was a very, very, very heated machlokas, no question about it. Okay? And Yeah, but it was very clear this was, you know, that's Kati Darva Shaltaira. The Maharal Bach writes, right, he writes at the beginning when he printed all the Kunshtim, he writes an introduction to what's, you know, the whole story. And he writes, he says, look again, he says, when he talks about what happened, he says, the Samku Lugodal Shabayat, they gave to me for the greatest of them, right?
Why do they need to give more than so?
No, just one. They gave the greatest one.
And then he could then subsequently give, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah. So, Halohu or Harav, whoever it is, Hechochom, Kumarino, Harav, Reb, Yaakov, Beirav, etc. In other words, he did refer to him with all the honorary titles.
Yeah, who referred to him there?
Marabach
actually at the end.
Says, Marino, Harav, Reb Yaakov, Beirav. And then he writes further on, right? He writes, Yedea Harikim, be Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, in the merit, in the mouth, the Satish and Dolu Kantrusi, Eidu Bukhomash and Negele Kaadim, when I wrote everything I wrote, although it was very heated, etc., HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and a Hakon la'abas for emes. It was all written because of the love for truth, ula abidoso v'yir ashama yisborach. Right? Out of Yiras Hashem. And he says, my riots I wrote in them, look at my riots, you'll see that will testify to my Kavon. You'll see that my Kavon is with a Shem Shammayim. Gam t'michosi t'yali da'edo. Presumably he means to the fact that I rejected this mechus. You see, I wasn't after any COVID or anything like that.
The
honest old be by measure there was to the coming, because I didn't want to accept it. But you may say that because he was insulted, though he doesn't say that. But Achein Atal v'Tashlum Amro, Isi l'chanes eshemom, Misad Achein Ekadosh Bohem, Levad v'Rei Shem Lohem, Al Penichutz. He says, Kish'ar ha'dvorim ha'zorim umorim, asher bohem ne'emorim. Like all the other strange and bitter things that were said, Kiloi ha'yu milibi. They weren't really from my heart. Adrabah, on the contrary, Aleim nishbar bekirbi. My heart aches over, you know, the words which were you know, painful words which were, yeah. And he writes in the end, he says, "V'agam ki klipos ha'peiros v'ron ha'teva." It's like the peels of fruit, which are, that's part of the teva. You've got the fruit you want to eat. You've got the klipos, the peel. V'chok ma'aspoyro ma'amor la'hamikam le'kaimom ad espoyom bidei ho'echele tefam o'chol kiliposom zoi. The kids, he says, in other words, that's the way that the Ofer gets Niskayim until somebody comes along and eats the fruit and throws away the peels. So basically he's saying this was the way that the Torah had to be Niskayim. There were, yes, heated words, heated arguments. But the Maaser, when you come and learn of the Inyan, put aside the harsh words which were thrown at each other, hold at each other, and look at the Machloikas in terms of the Torah. Right? That was basically a little bit of background to the history of that
machlokes. If he gave smicha to whoever gave it to, and so on and so forth, there are people in theory today who could be getting smicha, which leads to Moshe Rabbeinu.
If it would have continued, but it didn't. Promise it didn't.
At one stage, it's just stopped.
It stopped. It can't be told that the last one
they did. The last one they gave. He didn't give to anybody else. I mean,
not the minute. That's what I meant. And the question is why? That's the different theories as to why. Okay.
Was this written by somebody who could? A contemporary version of this whole research of this.
The first part of it, he writes there, he says other people have done research and some of what they write is absolutely unfounded.
Right.
In the introduction part, he says, what I'm writing here, this is the part which, yes, it's reading between the lines, but it's pretty clear. I think later on in the state they've got other things which is more theorizing, they don't know if it's right. So this is, most of this is very clear. If you read through, if you've got the time to go through all the struggles and things like that, you can see it. Most of it is from there, they've taken out. Certain parts are theories, if you want us to why, you know, for example, why you didn't want to publicize the story. It is definitely very misguided. And as I said, just this should not be, shouldn't be confused with, in more recent times, number one, in times of Rav Kook. Right? Rav Kook is very clear, by the way, although I think he changed his mind a little bit. There was a difference between the idea of having a Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, that I think he at least at one time is in favour of, yeah. But the part of smicha that he was not in favour of. Mm-hmm. The proper smicha thing, that not. I think it's that way around. And most definitely not to be confused with Napoleon's based in 1807. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because he instructed a Sanhedrin of 71 to be set up, because he wanted to see if the Jews really were Dafka trying to keep apart from the Christians, and he gave them 12 questions to answer, to do with marriage, divorce, and various other things. And over there, although yes, the head of that Sanhedrin was a Gonelon, the Yadovid, right, Rabbi Yosef Dovid's in time. But he had on the Sanhedrin, he had some reform rabbonim as well, who he told them basically, don't bother offering your opinion. He also had, and then there were a whole little bit. There was, I think, a group of laymen as well. That was where Napoleon set it up.
There was a mixture of different groups there.
So, and they were able to give answers, which that's why they had to be very careful, because they had to be true to Judaism, but at the same time, they were able to justify them. Okay, so now coming back, that's the background to it. So it says the Gemara Tzias. It's our Gemara. The Gemara says over here that Eliyahu is coming to the Sanhedrin. Not when he comes, he's going to the Sanhedrin, like the Imam Rabbah wanted to say. The Rosh Hashanah and Sanhedrin makes this point. So we said to that, if you look at the Ritzvah, it's beautiful. Depends on how you learn the Ritzvah. You can read the Ritzvah that way, the way they've read it till now, or you can say Pumfakhet. So Ritzvah himself is troubled by this. How's Eliyahu come to the Beis Nagol? He's the one who's going to set it up. So to that the Ritzvah says, his Lashon was, Pirush Lelishkas HaGodes. Not he's coming to the Beis Nagol, he's going to the Lelishkas HaGodes, which is the Mekoyim Beis Nagol. He's coming to the place of the Beis Nagol. That's where he's going to be revealed to start with. And Baruch Hashem, this is an addition because I didn't say this before, I found that that is the way the Chacham Sofer understood it.
And then the Sanhedrin will be set up.
Because the Chacham Sofer writes in that Shuvah which we've been quoting recently in Chelev Ol, or the Kutim Simen Sadiches, he writes, in the words of the Ritzvah, he writes upon this is Loshen, Ela Hashas Osik Uvo Bebiyas Eliyahu. The Gemara is talking about the coming of Eliyahu. Limkayim Lishkas HaGolzis B'Yerushalayim. The place of the Lishkas HaGolzis in Yerushalayim, commercial also what it's for, as it's for right in our Sugya. The Lav LeBeis in HaGodol Mamash Ko'omah. He doesn't mean to say he's literally coming to the Beis in HaGodol. Elo Limkayim Lishkas HaGolzis. So Baruch Sheke Kivananu to the Chasm Sefer. Right? The Chasm Sefer, that's what he understood the Ritzvah. There is no Beis in HaGodol. And he's the one who's going to make the Beis in HaGodol. He's just coming to set up. Again, better to me could read the Ritzvah either way. But it's definitely, you can't bring any right from this sukkah. And we just ended off this Nekudah by just being answered a little bit more. Why would it be that Eliyahu would duck go there? What's he going there for? There's no Beis in HaGodol there anyway. Why is he going to Lishkas HaGodol? So we said that the Mishnah in Ovid says, somebody who's a brazen person is going to Gehenna. Boishas ponim is a Gan Eden. Yirosa melefonef Hashem elekeinu she'tivne irachod b'mir v'yaminu m'sein chalkinu b'seir al-sechon. Asking Hashem to build that base on me, just give us a chilek in Torah. This is gone. It doesn't belong here. It belongs a couple of Mishnahs later at the end of Pirkei Avos, because the sixth parak is a bright one. Says Rabbi Akiva Egi, he brings in the Radach. He says, no. The Tana has a problem over here, and that is in Perek Beis Mishnah Hay. We learned over there that a Habayishan Lomit. If you're a Habayishan, you don't learn. But you just told me, yeah, Boshi's problem is going to Gan Eden. But how am I going to Gan Eden if I can't learn? I've got to have other problem to learn, but then I'm going to get heaven for that. So what do I do? No, what's the answer? The answer is, as far as the way he's looking at the Radar, I've got no choice. It's the better of the two evils. You've got to take a certain element of Azazponim, minimize what you have to take. You could even be Madai. There's a difference between an Azazponim, the somebody who is a brazen person, and a person who uses the middle of Azazponim. That is a chiluk the Rambam seems to make. So the vault is, we're saying, look, because of Shibbat Golis, that's why we can't learn properly, that's why there's so much confusion, and we have to have this middle of Azazponim to go off. We ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please build the Beis HaMikdash, bring that light of clarity, Kimitzi and Tzitzi Seirah, and when the light of clarity comes, that you're coming, then we won't need this Azazponim anymore. That's the question, that's the Tfilat HaKadosh Baruch Hu, build our Beis HaMikdash, build the Yerushalayim, give us this light of clarity, and as we mentioned, that goes beautifully with the idea of the Shefa Tal, whether we do take on like his thing about Tishbi Yaturzu or Tishbi Yatari, but that idea is there. When Eliyahu comes, there'll be such clarity. clarity, and therefore where is he going to go? To the place of the Sanhedrin, Har HaMoriah, Shemisham Yotzer Ali Yisrael. That is the guiding light, that is the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash, that's where the Beit HaMikdash is built on, the Kodesh Kodoshim. What's it got inside there? The Orem, which is Orem Nun, is the expression of light. It's the Evan Alpin of the entire world. That's the Sanhedrin are forming over there. Can we mention as well, that's in Yenna Begin Al-Shurus as well, that was more for Shavuot, the idea that we were in Elohim HaShar, it was all about, it started off Begin Al-Shurus by Yibim Yishavet HaShokin, that's when the Sanhedrin was all in shambles. Boyaz, Ibson said Boyaz, he was the one who Boyaz Elohim HaShar. This was when we were starting the cogs turning for Moshiach coming, it all started in the Sanhedrin. The roots are always in the Sanhedrin, whether the basin is there, whether the basin is not there, that is the Evan Arpino of the entire Bria and the eventual Gur. Fine, so the Gemara asks, I've got 1 minute, the Gemara asks, that's the last of the big Inyon, well, on this Sugya at least, there's one more to come at the end. The Gemara asks, Ihoki, if that's the case, so we did that, right, so Hanami, so here as well, way more, why don't we say the basin are Golos, and maybe Shabbos, Moshiach can come. Who says that Yahweh didn't come yesterday? Maybe he went to the base of Nagolo. So that the Gemara answers no. Kavabu Tapalan Yisrael, can I tell have already been promised, Shane and Yahweh born, that Yahweh will not come, no Ba'avi Shalabos, no Ba'avi Yom Tovim, not on Erev Shabbos, not on Erev Yom Tov, Mitnei HaTorah, because of the Tifa. People are busy preparing for Shabbos. Right? Okay, Be'ezat Hashem, we'll continue from there and finish this off tomorrow.